This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I am Chinedu Ofua, and here's what's coming up.
The spread of conflict is having a very real impact on the families as they're displaced and their livelihoods are destroyed.
That was Gemma Snowden, the World Food Programme spokesperson based in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, on the impact of Ethiopia's spreading conflict. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. The World Health Organization says just 15 African countries, less than a third of the continent's 54 nations, met a global goal of fully vaccinating 10% of their people against COVID-19 by the end of September. Mavis Okiri in Juaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana has more.
The goal was set in May by the World Health Assembly, the world's highest health policy setting body, which says almost 90% of high-income countries met the target. In Africa, Seychelles and Mauritius have fully vaccinated over 60% of their populations, Morocco 48%, and Tunisia, Comoros, and Cape Verde over 20%. Botswana, South Africa, and Rwanda are about to hit the 15% mark. Most of the African countries that have met the goal have relatively small populations, and 40% are small island developing states. Dr. Richard Mahigo, coordinator of the Vaccine Preventable Diseases Department of the WHO Regional Office for Africa, says most have the resources to acquire the vaccine or bilateral deals with the COVAX.
Unfortunately, 70% of African countries have missed this important milestone to protect their most vulnerable, with half of the 52 countries with COVID vaccination program in Africa have inoculated less than 2% of their population. WHO has gathered lessons learned from successful vaccine rollout and is supporting countries with greater challenges and bigger populations to apply them to their own context.
He urged countries to push forward with renewed strength to fully vaccinate 40% of their populations by the end of the year. Mahigo says although monthly vaccine deliveries have increased tenfold since June, the number needs to more than double by the end of the year to reach the target of 40%. He says the COVAX facility is working with donors to identify countries that could absorb large volumes of vaccine.
It is also identifying, with the support indeed of WHO and partners, countries that do not have other means to procure vaccines, and will ensure that these countries are in the front of the queue to get enough vaccine to cover their priority populations. In addition to these efforts, we need pledges of doses by wealthier countries to materialize soon.
Dr. Palmer Smith-Lawrence, Acting Director of Health Services in the Ministry of Health and Wellness in Botswana, credited collaboration with the World Health Organization and other relevant stakeholders who help cobble together plans for a system. She says the plan conveyed all stakeholders from planning, coordination, and implementation stages. She says the target population for the vaccine rollout program was adults over the age of 18. Laura says Botswana sought to secure and procure COVID-19 vaccines using direct available platforms, noting that the process began as early as May 2020 and included subscribing to global regional vaccine access platforms such as COVAX. She says the country also engaged with vaccine manufacturers directly by signing bilateral agreements.
We have also leveraged on existing diplomatic relationships with different countries to obtain vaccine donations. To date, we have managed to fully vaccinate 22.4% of our target population of 1.5 million, while 29.6% of this target have received first doses.
Lauren says public vaccination sites have been expanded to include community-based settings to provide equitable access service to all, with plans to use drive-through models as well as shopping malls for easy and convenient access by the public. Africa has to date received 200 million vaccine doses and administered 71%, with 60 million people fully vaccinated, which represents just 4% of the population. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Jaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has appointed Italian-Swedish diplomat Stefan de Mistura as his envoy to the disputed Western Sahara region. Morocco's ambassador to the UN, Omar Hilal, said Morocco was consulted beforehand and approved of his selection. Western Sahara remains the subject of a decades-old dispute between Morocco and the Algerian-backed Polisario Front. Ahmed Fati, a global affairs analyst and a UN correspondent, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed Elshenawy what the appointment could mean for the conflict.
The position was vacant or inactive for over 2 years. The Polisario stopped engaging with the special representative of the Secretary General for the past 3 years, while Morocco stopped engagement over the past 2 years. I think for de Mistura, who is a seasoned UN diplomat, and the last position he held was the special envoy of the Secretary General to Syria, gives him a different weight in approaching the mediation and the tasks of his mission for the Secretary General. I think de Mistura will have to start from the point where Kohler, who was the previous special envoy and the former president of Germany, was the formula of the roundtable meetings that took place in Switzerland. This can be a good starting point for him. On the other side, the incursions continues across the eastern berm and retaliation or defensive from the western berm. The MINURSO, which is the UN mission in the Sahara, faces difficulties operationally. While they have freedom of movement on the western berm and security, this is lacking on the eastern side. They cannot conduct patrols, whether by air or by land, on the eastern side, while in the western, they conduct within a buffer zone. The incursion in the buffer zone known as Girgara between Morocco and the Sahrawi territories still faces a disruption for the traffic of people and trade between Morocco and Mauritania. So it's getting very complicated. So I don't think that de Mistura is going to be ready to submit anything major. However, there is a chance to resume the political track, but there have to be more clear timeline, and that would be lacking.
In December 2020, then President Donald Trump broke with previous U.S. positions and recognized Morocco's sovereignty over the whole of Western Sahara. At the end of August, Algeria, Morocco's neighbor and rival and a key backer of the Polisario Front, broke off diplomatic relations with Rabat, particularly over Western Sahara. How different would be the role of the UN envoy, given the rising tensions between Morocco and Algeria and the U.S. recognition?
Algeria's decision to sever diplomatic ties with Morocco, this was motivated by their domestic agenda and calculations and not directly linked to the Polisahara issue. Nevertheless, at the same time, you see that Algeria was also part of the roundtable negotiation rounds in Geneva. So they are an invisible player. This gives them a little bit leverage with their allies, in this case, the Sahrawi, living in the eastern Berm, but does not really have any conclusive action to impact the situation on the ground. The U.S. decision to recognize the sovereignty of Morocco over the Sahara region came out of political calculations by President Trump. Nevertheless, this is a binding decision for the U.S. Government, since it was also deposited at the U.N. So this took care of the international aspect. However, there are 15 members in the Security Council, including the U.S. You have to convince at least other 9 without any veto to recognize the sovereignty of Morocco. Unfortunately, this is not happening. There are much more difficult geostrategic calculations involved in this regard, and it will be almost unrealistic to foresee that this is happening anytime soon. Although the referendum was part of the resolutions associated with the Sahara issue in the past, this has not been the case for quite a long time, probably after special envoy back then was James Baker III, who was a former U.S. Secretary of State. The talk which Algeria and the Polisario keep ignoring is about self-governing.
That was Ahmed Fati, a global affairs analyst and a UN correspondent, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Elshenawy. The United Nations World Food Programme has completed its first round of food distribution to Ethiopians affected by the spread of conflict into the Afar and Amhara regions. However, a lack of supplies due to various impediments still sees distribution in Tigray lagging behind. Gemma Snowden is WFP's spokesperson based in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Reporter Ruben Kiyama spoke to her for VOA. He began by asking how serious the situation is right now and which are the most affected regions.
The situation across northern Ethiopia is extremely serious, with conflict spreading into regions neighboring Tigray. And it's estimated that up to 7 million people across all three regions are in dire need of food assistance. The spread of conflict is having a very real impact on the families as they're displaced and their livelihoods are destroyed. And I was in Amhara a couple of weeks ago and met several families who had been displaced from their homes. And they all told me that prior to this conflict, they had steady livelihoods that brought in income and it gave them food security, whereas now they're completely reliant on WFP food assistance. So I think that's just an indication of the impact that this is having on everyday families.
Specifically, what kind of supplies are needed right now?
Well, from WFP's perspective, urgent supplies needed are, of course, food. The emergency food assistance food basket that we distribute contains cereals, pulses, and vegetable oil. And then obviously also to run operations where in urgent need of fuel and cash, as well as nutrition supplies. So we do two different nutrition programs. One is called Blanket Supplementary Feeding Programs, and that's for children who are under 5 years old, as well as pregnant and breastfeeding mothers. And that's to prevent malnutrition. Then we also have a targeted supplementary feeding program, and that's for children under five again, as well as pregnant and breastfeeding mothers who are moderately malnourished. So the difference between the two is the types of food that are distributed to them. But malnutrition is obviously a huge concern in a situation like this.
Could you explain whether the shortfall in supplies is just from a lack of funding or if there are other impediments?
There's a multitude of reasons that supplies haven't been reaching people in need. They include logistical reasons, conflict, and of course funding. Logistical issues we can overcome, and we've been doing this in recent weeks. We've had almost 200 trucks enter, for example, Tigray, and we're consistently working with authorities to ensure that supplies are reaching people in need. Conflict and funding, it's more difficult. Funding we definitely can't overcome ourselves. If we have no money, then it obviously means that we can't provide food assistance. And at the moment, across all of northern Ethiopia, to scale up and sustain operations, we need $184 million. And then additionally, we have an unprecedented funding gap across the entire country of $426 million. Obviously, the conflict is where a lot of the attention lies at the moment, but we also have to keep in mind that we have a number of programs across the entire country that ensure food security for people. And if these programs are neglected, then the entire country then becomes impacted. As for conflict, there's still some areas where we're unable to reach people in need. And if we can't reach people in need, then we can't provide food assistance for them. So it's absolutely vital that we're able to have access to all of the communities where there are people who are in need of food assistance. Otherwise, the situation is going to worsen.
From where you sit, Gemma, would you say access has improved? Is it easier now to move trucks and staff into the affected regions?
Speaking on Tigray to start with, in recent weeks, we had more than 170 trucks enter Tigray. And we have more expected to arrive in the coming days. So this is, of course, excellent. We do need 100 trucks arriving daily to meet the needs of the entire population in that region, though. We're hoping that this can continue and we can continue to get more assistance into the region. And then, for example, in Amhara, there are some communities where we haven't been able to deliver the food assistance needed due to the conflict. But it's absolutely vital that we're able to actually get food into these communities so that it can be distributed.
Lastly, what's your parting shot?
WFP, of course, is absolutely committed to providing food assistance to everyone in need. And what we're seeing here is the impact of conflict on families. So it's really, really vital that everyone, all parties to the conflict, allow WFP to have the access we need to reach the populations who need food assistance. I mean, these are families who often have no part in the conflict, but they're the ones suffering. They're the ones who have been displaced from their homes. They've had their livelihoods destroyed. And now they're relying on us to get food assistance to them. And that's our number one focus.
That was Gamas Nordin, WFP spokesperson in Addis Ababa, speaking with VOA's Ruben Kiyama from Nairobi. Police in Nigeria's Zamfara state say security forces rescued 187 people yesterday who were abducted by armed groups in four different communities in the last 2 months. Criminal gangs since December have been targeting schools and universities to take hostages for ransom. Authorities last month shut down telecommunication services in Zamfara, the center of a string of kidnappers, to disrupt coordination among the gangs. Cameroon's Prime Minister Joseph Dion Nguté, during a visit to the troubled western regions, has called for armed separatists to lay down their weapons or be killed. Civilians and rights groups say peace will only return if the government declares a ceasefire. Mosi Edwin Kinzaka reports from Bamenda, Cameroon.
Separatist shooting as well as celebration met Cameroonian Prime Minister Joseph John Nguté this week on his arrival in Matazan, an English-speaking village bordering the French-speaking west region of Cameroon. Military troops rushed Nguté to his car, with civilians fleeing for safety. The military said hidden separatist fighters in the surrounding bush wanted to scare civilians who were welcoming Nguté on his way to Bamenda, capital of the English-speaking northwest region. The military said it did not fire back and the shooters escaped. Nguté told hundreds of civilians in Bamenda that he was the bearer of a special message. He spoke in Pidgin, a popular language in Cameroon's English-speaking western regions.
We came here.
Nguté says Cameroonian President Paul Biya has sent him to ask for an end to fighting, killing, and the destruction of property. He says most Cameroonians want an end to the separatist crisis and for peace to return to their country. Nguté says fighters still in the bush should drop their weapons for life to come back to normalcy. He says Cameroonians are tired of hardship brought about by fighting. Nguté said fighters who refuse to drop their weapons and disturb the peace in the English-speaking regions will be killed. Scores of senior state functionaries, government ministers, lawmakers, traditional rulers, and the clergy accompanied Biya's envoy to Bamenda. Asheri Kilu is the Secretary of State in the Ministry of Basic Education and a leader from Bui, an administrative unit near Bamenda called Division. She says Nguté asked leaders to tell separatists that the government will never allow any part of Cameroon to break away.
He made us know that peace cannot come if we do not, you know, start it, if we do not promote it. And he also intimated that we should continue to tell the truth to our people. We should continue to tell them that whatever they are looking for in the name of a southern Cameroon will never happen.
Civilians carried billboards asking for an immediate ceasefire to end the crisis. Daniel Fondou is a French-speaking activist with the rights group Dynamique Citoyenne. Fondou says Cameroonian governments will likely not stop the fighting, killing and destruction of property if it does not withdraw its military and begin negotiations with fighters for a return to peace. So many separatists are ready to sacrifice their lives to obtain what they think is their legitimate right. If the government of Cameroon continues to send its troops to fight the separatists, the Central African state will continue to lose the lives of its citizens, Fondou says. Cameroon says it has created a special status for the English-speaking regions as a solution to the demands made by English speakers in the majority French-speaking nation. The special status means assemblies of chiefs, regional assemblies, and regional councils for the two English-speaking regions, with each of them having elected presidents and three commissioners responsible for economic, health, social, educational, sports, and cultural development affairs. The special status for the English-speaking regions was proposed during a grand national dialogue called by Biya from September 30 through October 4, 2019 to propose solutions to the crisis in the country's English-speaking regions. Separatists reject the special status. The United Nations says that the separatist war has forced more than 500,000 people to flee their homes since the conflict erupted in late 2017. More than 3,000 people have been killed. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News.
Botswana appealed this week for support from the European Union as the Southern African country bids to host the Kimberley Process Permanent Secretariat. The Kimberley Process came into force in 2003 as part of efforts to stop the illicit diamond trade. From Gaborone, Botswana, reporter Nkondisi Dube has the details.
President Mokgweetsi Masisi made the appeal to a visiting EU delegation in Gaborone. Masisi says diamonds play a critical role in the development of the African country.
We are one of the largest diamond-producing countries in the world. And almost all our development is attributable to diamond. Our mainstay is diamond. So we have managed the resource, kept it underground, mined it, and given it to the world to enjoy in the most secure and stable manner. And being a big player in the production of, we thought it prudent, and we rallied and got support from many quarters for us to host the Kimberley Process Secretariat.
EU member Austria, along China, Russia, and the United States, are also vying to host the secretariat.
We want to ask for your collective conscience and analysis and realignment with the very goals of your new program to seek for your support in the hosting of the Kimberley Process Secretariat. Critical institutions such as that and the capacity to manage them for our development would be part of what you would automatically support. And so we want to urge that while we inform you that we are determined to do the best for the world in terms of management of diamonds and the value chains.
The head of the EU delegation, Rita Laranjina, acknowledged Botswana's request. She says the bloc will continue to explore areas of cooperation with Botswana. For decades, illicitly mined and sold diamonds have funded terrorism and civil wars, particularly in Africa, where diamonds are found in several countries. The Kimberley Process seeks to eliminate trade in what are called conflict diamonds to cut off funds to warring parties. In 2019, the organization's 55 members decided to select a location to host a permanent administrative support staff and secretariat headquarters. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I am Chinedu Opo in Washington. For all latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC.